Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Muppet Show!
Hello, there, lollygaggers. Another show on tap, lollygagging sports. I am Bo Reed along with Samantha Button. Samantha, I was forced to play the Muppet song because once again, Irby was careless and got kidnapped by the Muppets, and that was the ransom. I had to play the Muppet song at the top of the show to get him released. So he should be released momentarily, not in time for the show this week, but. Still.
Well, he wasn't able to communicate with us a bit, so we do have some contributions from him, from his captivity he was able to share with us. But I don't know, I have to tell you, when I hear that gong at the beginning of the Muppet, it's like, I have this almost like Pavlovian response, where like I picture myself like a cartoon snail, where my little like eyeball antennas are just like, woo, and they like pop up, and I'm like, oh, Muppet. Like...
See, the thing is, like, obviously I don't have a problem playing the Muppet. I feel like they could have just asked me instead of kidnapping Irby. But, you know, it is what it is. I hope it's not the start of a Muppet crime wave. We had that, what, last year about this time? Like, all of a sudden, they got you, then Irby, then they got me. Like
I forgot about the crime wave. That's right. Well, hopefully this is just a one-off, which I believe it is. We believe we know his location, and we fully expect him to be returned to us.
He is going to have week. He is going to have to go back through compliance training, though.
Well, you never know.
He gets to repeat that course.
Compliance training, like anyone on this podcast complies with anything. Sure.
Fair enough. Okay. Well. We got a different show tonight because it's just the two of us. So you want to kick us off not with some rapid fire, but we've got our annual lollygagging awards to give out. For those that are new to the program, these are not, I repeat, not legitimate MVP, Cy Young. This is the other side of that coin. This is the least valuable player, the anti-Cy Young. So, Samantha, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, so these are our annual awards. They are, you know, you'll probably recognize most of these from last year if you are a longtime listener. We've tweaked a few. There are, yeah, a lot of them are sort of the anti-award for whatever the corresponding official MLB award is, but some of them, there are a few positives in here.
A couple.
So let's get into it. I have Irby's responses as well. So I'll go ahead and read off the categories. You can share yours. I'll share mine as well as Irby's because he was kind enough to send those to us from captivity. So let's kick it off with the big boy, the LVP, the least valuable player.
This,
what do you have?
This might be a lollygagging unanimous vote, but it's obviously Anthony Rendon, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of like the correct answer, right? Like, Irby answered, of course, with that as well. I had kind of tried to go into a little bit of data here, although, you know, all the data just disappears when you realize Anthony Rendon is just pocketing a check and literally doing nothing. So, you know, even if you're batting, like, 140, you're still doing better than Anthony Rendon. But I did look into this a little bit. I mean, and I think there's an argument for Jordan Walker. There's an argument for Anthony Santander. And there's an argument, unfortunately, for Big Christmas. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what you kind of consider to be the most defensive piece. You know, if you're looking just for the person with the most plate appearances and the worst WAR, that's going to be Jordan Walker. Uh-huh. If you're looking for the person who's basically pocketing the most money and giving the worst performance, that's Anthony Santander. And if you're looking for the person who is a liability on both sides of the ball and who's also blocking players with more talent, it might be Big Christmas. So with the easy answer, of course, Anthony Rendon.
Yeah.
So the next one, I'll be interested to see if this is unanimous as well. The anti-Cy Young. Who is the opposite of Cy Young?
You know what I love about the anti-Cy Young, like, it's one where I can give it to a reliever if I want to.
Yes, you can.
You know, typically, like, Cy Young goes to a starter because you have a reliever that was the Rolays reliever of the year. At least that's what it used to be. All right, but this one I can have fun. Devin Williams has to be mine. Like this, I can't think of another pitcher who imploded more than that guy.
Everyone said Devin Williams. I said that, or B said that. We all said Devin Williams. So that's unanimous. So he's like Shohei Ohtani. He's a unanimous winner. Okay. So worst manager.
You know, it's got to be the guy that led his team to one of the most incredible collapses we've seen in modern baseball history. That'd be AJ Hinch.
I have the same answer. Irby answered Brandon Hyde, which is valid, but I think the correct answer is AJ Hinch. It's hard to get around how badly managed that team was. Okay, what about the worst owner?
Again, not exactly a tough call here. David Rubenstein.
Interesting. Okay, so we all have different answers.
That's cool.
I said John Fisher because that's going to be my perpetual answer.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Irby said Bob Nutting.
Wow.
And you know what? Oh, all of those, and they're all correct.
Yeah.
They're all worst owners.
It was not a good year for owners in baseball.
No, it wasn't. Perhaps some better than others. But yeah, there were many candidates for this, and they're all good at it. All right. Most entertaining player. So who do you just have the most fun watching out of anybody?
Baby Vlad.
Unanimous. Everybody said Baby Vlad. That's cool. I like that. All right. Who is the worst defender in baseball?
You know, he was so bad that he got demoted by two different teams this past season. One Leody Taveras, who still to this day takes the worst path to a ball I've ever seen in center field.
Oh, God. That's a great answer. Irby and I both said Luis Arraez, which we're kind of kidding about, but I think yours might actually be the correct answer. There's nothing scarier or more painful than watching Leody Taveras try to track a ball in center field. Truly amazing stuff. All right. Who is most unlikely to repeat their performance in 2026? So who had a banner year that you don't think can do it again?
You know, I'm really sorry to say this, Toronto, but your Blue Jays, I don't know. I think this was a flash in the pan. We'll see.
Oh, so this was actually supposed to be a player. But I do think that's the correct answer.
You know what? I did know that, and I wanted to go collectively the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, okay. Well, that we'll allow it. We'll allow it. I will allow that one. Okay, so for me, I had Trent Grisham as my answer to this until he accepted the qualifying offer. And I thought, well, if he stays in Yankee Stadium, he can probably just do the same thing again, right?
Yeah.
So I had to change my answer. And you guys, everyone's going to hate this. This will be a collectively hated answer, but I'm pretty sure the correct answer to this is Cal Raleigh. I'm sorry.
Ooh,
I know nobody wants to do that. Irby had an interesting answer, too. He said Trevor Rogers. He had a note here. He wanted us to note that Trevor Rogers did this in 2021 as well. And then he came kind of back to earth after that, same deal. So he would like it noted for the record that he wants Trevor Rogers marked down as his breakout candidate for the 2029 season.
That's a good note. That is a good note. From an individual player standpoint, though, I'm going to agree with you on this one. But I still think Toronto as a whole is not.
I think you're right about that. Yeah, if we're looking for it collectively as a team, there's just no way that's repeatable. You know what, right?
I mean, and the thing is, like I don't think either one of us are saying the Big Dumper is going to suddenly go in the dumps. But come on, man! Like that was a career year.
Well, right, because the criteria here is not who's going to become terrible.
Yeah.
It's who can't possibly repeat what they did. So, yeah, it's meaner if you look at it through a Trent Grisham lens and you say, okay, if that guy went anywhere else, like, he's going to be awful and completely ineffective. Nobody's saying Cal Raleigh's going to be bad. I'm just saying it's probably going to be impossible for him to repeat what he did. So we're not necessarily attacking the player here. We're just saying, like, this isn't sustainable.
Right.
So speaking of that breakout player, but not for 2029, for this year. So who is your breakout player for this season?
I'm going to have to go with Junior Caminero.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. I had Pete Crow Armstrong.
Uh-huh.
He got a little bit of ink, and you know, we've all been on him for a while for sort of semi-non-baseball reasons, but I think this was a big breakout year for him. And
yeah.
Kirby said Christopher Sanchez, so mm-hmm. those are, I think, all pretty worthy candidates. So, okay, who is the best mascot?
That is going to be the Philly Fanatic until somebody comes along and knocks him off his pedestal. At least
all right, well, Irby agrees with you, but you're both wrong. The answer is Dinger. See?
You know what I love about that particular award is it's the same every year.
Yeah, it has a correct answer, and you guys keep getting it wrong.
One of these years, I'll say Dinger just to see how you react to it.
You should. I'll probably, and then I'm just going to be like, see, I'm glad you learned. Look, you learned. You learned the correct answer to this question. All right, well, let's see. This one, I don't know if this has a correct answer. Who is the worst mascot?
Oh, this absolutely does have a correct answer. It's that stupid horse in Arlington, Rangers captain.
Yeah, you think it's captain. I think it's captain, too. Irby thinks it's the Swinging Friar. It's a valid answer. The Swinging Friar is not great.
Right.
But I think it's captain because, unlike, say, Mr. Matt, like, we all hate Mr. Matt, right? We hate Mr. Matt. But it's funny, right? Like, or Mr. Redlegs. Like, I hate Mr. Redlegs. But it's kind of funny,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like, you can hate on it, and it's fun. It's not really any fun to hate Captain. It just sucks.
It's true. That's true.
So, yeah, I think it's Captain. I mean, he doesn't even do anything bad good. You know, he's just there.
He's just there, yeah.
So, yeah, nobody loves Captain. Okay. Most improved team.
Ooh. You know, I'm going to reward the Seattle Mariners. They finally did it. They finally closed out the West, made a deep run, deeper than they have before.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's a good answer. Irby and I both said the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And how about the worst backslide for a team?
Oh, can I pick on the Mets? I'm going to pick on the Mets.
You're picking the Mets. Well, yeah, to me, there's two right answers to this. You went Mets, Irby and I went Braves.
Uh-huh.
They're both right. Oh, they're both right.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have gone Braves. Yeah.
Yeah. Either one. Okay. Most underrated player.
I'm going to go with a guy who absolutely destroys every other team in the American League West, and you really don't hear much about him outside of the American League West. Shea Langeliers.
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting answer. Okay. I had a bunch of answers for this.
There are a lot out there.
Yeah. I mean, Irby said Geraldo Perdomo from the Diamondbacks, which is another good answer.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of looked at this mostly from the perspective that there are a lot of people who are very, very good and still underrated. Mm-hmm, like Jose yeah. Ramirez is a great candidate for this. I think Paul Skenes is a great candidate for this. Even Cal Raleigh, who did not win the MVP,
yeah.
despite turning in the best performance. So I think you can argue that he might be the yeah. most underrated player
sure.
because he did something incredible and didn't get credit for it. So, but yeah, I think all of those are fair answers. All right, flip side of that. Who's the most overrated player?
See, now this is one that I went back and forth on with like a few different guys.
Oh, yeah, well, give me a couple if you want to. That's fine. Or give me your top candidate.
My top candidate is Cody Bellinger.
Ooh, okay. Okay, you and I kind of agreed in a way. We'll get to that. Okay, who else you got? Who else you got?
Giancarlo Stanton.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, like, he's not really – it's not that he's overrated, but I think a lot of people make way too big of a deal out of Aaron Judge.
Okay. Well, my answer was everyone on the Yankees. So you and I have basically given the same answer. Because I agree. Like, I like Aaron Judge. Like, I enjoy him. He seems like a good guy. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
I think there are people out there who are a lot more interesting. Including one Cal Raleigh. So, yeah, I mean, Aaron Judge is really good, but he also might be overrated. I think, you know, like, it's sort of the flip side of Ohtani, where it's like, you can actually make the argument that Ohtani is both overrated and underrated.
Mm-hmm.
You could say he was overrated because it's ridiculous that they're making new rules for him, like that he gets extra time between, like, that's horseshit. You shouldn't be doing that, right? But he's also kind of underrated because, like, hello, he's pitching and hitting, and he's doing both really well. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like you can kind of make it work either way. But yeah, I think there's a great argument for Aaron Judge being overrated. I think there's a great argument for everyone on the Yankees, except for Gus and Petty
mm-hmm.
being overrated.
Yeah.
Irby said Carlos Correa. I don't know if he's the most overrated player, but yes, I agree that he is overrated. He and his German Shepherd.
I was about to say, with that ankle, that's a feat to be overrated with that ankle.
It's it's tough. Okay, so last one. Who is the most likely to be eaten by the mad portal?
All right, so my criteria for this one was the guy who is A, either an asshole, B, a dope, or C, both. And I found C. Framber Valdez. If you're going to throw at your own catcher because you didn't make a pitch and gave up a home run, you are an asshole and a dope, and the mound portal is going to come for you.
Okay, so yeah, you're using the mound portal's like instrument of justice, right? Which is like, and there's no right answer to this. There's ways to interpret why the mound portal does what it does, because we don't know why it does what it does. Mm-hmm. So you're using the mound portal as an instrument of justice. So Irby is using the mound portal as sort of like way to correct things that are weird or wrong, because he is saying so to Imanaga, because he wants the mound portal to eat him, because he says it's weird he took the qualifying offer, and he is correct about that. It is weird. Deeply weird. So, okay, so that's two. I'm going to give you a third one, which is, what if the mound portal just eats people because they just can't handle being out there, and the mound portal needs to remove them? I'm looking at you, Chris Sale.
Oh, the guy, the creative juices are flowing now, because now I need at some point just a picture of a mound with a cut up jersey just laying on the mound.
Mm. Right? Well, yeah, it's probably not going to eat that jersey, right?
Like I swear to all that is holy. If we ever collab on a book called The Mound Portal, explaining the mound portal, which we should, that's the cover. It's the mound and the Chris Sale jersey, White Sox jersey, cut up.
Yeah, and just like a piece of it kind of hanging out at the side of the mound portal as though it swallowed most, but not all of it.
Yes, exactly.
The cover art here could be really good, right? I don't know if I have... I was about to tell you I don't know if I have a book's worth of things to say about the mound portal, but that is wrong. I 100% have a book's worth of things to say about the mound portal. In fact, I think I probably have several. So, okay. Anything else? Any other? Or you want to give out any additional awards or any comments on this, or shall we move on?
No, I think we covered it there. We even got the mount. We even got the mound portal. That's a new entry. That's a new award this year.
Yeah, that is a new award. We subbed that out for the Tim Anderson Award, which was the award that we were giving to a person who was the most likely to start a fight they can't finish. But we decided to give poor Tim a break this year because Tim is, you know, not really relevant in baseball anymore. And I do hope that he will come back and entertain us. Mm-hmm. But the mound portal, far more effective destructive force this season than Tim Anderson. So, you know, we have to give the mound portal its due.
Okay. Well, let's make a switch. And does this count in a way like the time machine, what we're doing next? Does it count?
I mean, I think so. I think this is a little bit.
It's like time machine. It's like time capsule. Thank you. Time capsule-ish. It's time
capsule-ish. Yeah, I think this is a little bit time capsule-ish. Yeah.
Okay. So one thing we did see end of the season and in the playoffs especially, a lot of heartbreak. A lot more than normal, right? Like you know, you lose a series, you lose a series. But the way some of these were lost, the way some of these teams lost playoff spots, the way some of these teams just exist, it's heartbreaking.
The way they exist. Right? It's true. It's just such a funny way to phrase it, but it's true. I think some of that, you know, outside of this business of the team that just exists, I think when you have a really good season, which is what we got this year, we got a really good season, you're also going to have more heartbreak, because a good season almost always has a lot of highly contested points in it. It's more entertaining, but it also hurts a little more, especially if you're one of the teams on the wrong end of it, right?
Yeah. So, which direction would you like to go here, Samantha? Would you like to start with the chief heartbreak, the king of heartbreaks this year, or start with a team that just cares about existing and work our way up?
Let's work our way up. Let's work our way up. Let's start light, you know, like kind of like when you put the frog in boiling water. you know, like, yeah. It doesn't feel like anything at first, and then you're, you know, burning alive from the inside up. So yeah, let's take a toe dip in here, and let's begin with those who are in pain merely from existing.
All right,
that sounds way worse now that I think
it kind of does. That's the worst one. It kind of, at least with a fan base, well, I don't know. I think you have a sense of, like, of indifference if you're this fan base, because it's been so long. The Colorado Rockies, who seem to only care about being 500, as we've said many, many times. So they are the just existing team. What we're going to do is we're going to match each of these teams with an 80s power ballad. Straight up 80s power ballad. Now, I don't know about you, Samantha, but I chose mostly hair bands.
I knew you would. So I chose mostly not hair bands, although a few did creep in here.
This is okay. That's perfect then. That's perfect. I've got hair bands and you've got everyone else. This is great. Okay. Yeah. 80s power ballads.
Yeah. Okay. We got a few hair bands creeping in
here. I almost pulled the trigger on a couple of pop ballads, but. I pretty much stuck with rock. So, okay. So, the Rockies. The every year wants to be 500 but can't even do that existence Rockies. I went with Love Bites by Def Leppard.
I think everybody's going to have a, sort of a similar sentiment on this one. Irby did answer this one. Most of these he didn't give an answer for, but he did give us I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner, because you're assuming that they don't even know, because they've never experienced
it. You know what's funny about that? I almost gave the Rockies that song. Almost.
Yeah, I hate that song, so I ignored it. I do not hate the Def Leppard song, actually. but yeah, no, that's appropriate. I gave, because their attendance is so high, but they're so bad, and it's so crushing, and it's like a terrible experience, but you can't stop and you can't stay away. I gave them Miami Sound Machines, Can't Stay Away From You. Which is, it's debatable whether that's a power ballad, right? That might just be a ballad, but I don't know.
I don't, you know what?
Here, and the rules are there are no rules. So only rule I did stick to is I did not use anything that was outside of the 1980s.
There you go.
And let me tell you, there's a point where that got very upsetting, and I will tell you about it. But I did adhere to that. As far as what constitutes a power ballad, I'm a little loosey-goosey on that.
You know, it's actually interesting how like the late 80s and early 90s sound just kind of meshed together. You're like, oh, that was obviously an 80s song. No, it was 1991.
Like, oh, for sure. Yeah, I think there's a lot of, I mean, you notice it too with like hair and fashion and stuff like that. Like most of the early 90s looks exactly like what you think of as stereotypically 80s, and so does the sound, but it also builds, you know. I mean, later I think we get more of a like a lacuna, like sort of between types of music, like after grunge, essentially, where we have a complete break from what things used to sound like, and then we get an evolution of sound again. But here we're still in the evolution, right? Like, it's why I always say, like, 80s hair bands doing power ballads walk so Celine Dion could run.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, like, I know they don't sound like the same kind of music, but they kind of are. Like, Rob Arbilla once described when he was doing a Celine Dion song for his podcast, 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, which you should really listen to if you haven't. It's fantastic. And he described listening to Celine Dion as, like, drinking rosé through a fire hose, which is probably the greatest description I have ever heard of listening to Celine Dion sing.
Yeah.
But I think that's also true of a lot of 80s hair metal bands, that they are really going to town. And I think that's, those guys like basically paved the way for people like Celine Dion to do like the Titanic song. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Bret Michaels to this day is one of my favorite songwriters, and I will die on that hill.
I can't say I think Bret Michaels is much of a lyricist, but musically, I think he does some really interesting stuff that's very underappreciated.
He's underrated. Oh, let's see what I did there.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I agree. I agree. If we're talking music, not lyrics. The lyrics are
very and it's worth noting that Miami Sound Machine is always welcome in something like this. All right.
Oh, well, yeah, we're very pro Miami Sound Machine, right? Like, this is like one of my dying wishes, is to see Miami Sound Machine in Miami. I need it. I believe they still play occasionally, and I think that I need that. So,
all right,
it's on the list.
It's on the list. Keep an eye out. Def Leppard just announced a pavilion tour for next year.
I can't say that I'm going to go see Def Leppard. I do enjoy
Leppard.
I do not enjoy them that much.
I misspoke. Not Def Leppard. Motley Crue. Motley Crue announced that.
Yeah, I'm also not going to see Motley Crue.
Oh, that's a good show.
But you will.
of course I will.
Because you love Motley Crue. I like Motley Crue. I do not love Motley Crue. So I will probably not be going to the concert. But I'm very excited for you because they are your favorite band.
Yes,
but.
They are. Yes, they are. Okay. Next on the list, the New York Mets. Shut out of the playoffs on the last day. Samantha, how about we alternate? I went first last time. How about you go first this time?
Okay. I gave them Careless Whisper. by George Michael.
Nice.
Mostly because of the I'm never going to dance again lyric. Because they are, in fact, never going to dance again. They're never going to the big dance, you guys. It's never going to happen ever.
See, I went more loner.
Okay.
On this one. Here I Go Again on My Own by Whitesnake.
That's not a ballad. Do you consider that a ballad?
That's
a
ballad.
I do not consider that a ballad.
It's a ballad. It's a power ballad.
I do not consider that a ballad at all. Although the sentiment is correct.
I will say this. It does have a little bit more edge than most power ballads, but I do because of the lyrics, I do still consider it a power ballad.
I'm gonna go again on my own, walking down the only road. The lonely road of loneliness, to quote The Office, but yeah.
Yeah. Did Irby have a answer on this one?
No, he only answered for Colorado, and then he has an honorable mention. That doesn't have anything to do with any of the categories he actually made, but those are the only answers I received from him.
So. All right, let's save his honorable mention for the end, because now I'm curious.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. The Phillies got mound portaled to end their season. I feel bad. Did we generate a mound portal because we were talking about the mound portal so much that it actually affected a postseason series?
I hope not. Or at least if we did, we clearly weren't specific enough about our needs, because it's not that I didn't want to see the mound portal again. I did. I'm morbidly fascinated by it. It's kind of like watching horror movies, you know? Like, this is horrible. Let's see some more, you know? Like, that's the mound portal to me. I just didn't necessarily want it directed at, like, the Phillies. I'm sorry, you guys. I hope we didn't do that.
I really hope we didn't do that. But, speaking of Brett Michaels, I went Poison for the Phillies mound portal with Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me because I don't get it.
The whole essence of the song, Every Rose Has Its Thorn, it was a good pitcher that made a mistake. It was a good team that went out because of a mistake. The thorn is the mistake.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. I went very literal with mine, and I went with Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill, because it's literally what he did when he got Mount Portal.
Oh. Yikes. Yeah. 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 I'm envious on that one. That's a much better selection than mine. Well done. A little jealous of that, but okay. All right. Now we get the two back-to-back chief heartbreaks of the playoffs. Let's start with the Mariners losing Game 7 to the ALCS, blowing a late lead to the Blue Jays. Samantha, what'd you go with?
I went with When the Children Cry by White Lion.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very deep cut here. Because, I mean, every child in Seattle was crying after this, right? So, I mean, I'm sorry to do it, but, like, you made kids cry. You did. You choked and you made children cry.
Mm-hmm. I went with Love Hurts by Nazareth.
Ah, you know what? Mm-mm. Violation.
70s?
I tried to do that, and I looked it up, and it was written in 1975.
Okay, I've got a backup. I've got a backup.
Okay.
I've got a backup. Good catch. I've got a backup, and it's the same one that Irby had for the Rockies. I Want to Know What Love Is. I think they both work.
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. I Want to Know What Love Is.
Yeah, there were. This was a. There were a number.
Man, Love Hurts sounds 80s though. That's crazy. See, that's what we're talking about. We were just. We were just talking about this, like how the decades kind of like meshed together.
Well, and that song too, like had a, I think a couple of sort of like rebirths. It also had a rebirth in the late 90s because it was in one of those Gatorade commercials. I was obsessed with this when I was like in like I think it was like early high school, where the guy was on the track and he's like bleeding Gatorade after he jumps over the hurdles, and they were playing that song in the background. It was like my favorite commercial when I was like a 14-year-old jock, and I was like obsessed with it. And I think I ended up buying a Nazareth CD just to get that song. So yeah, that song is just like, I don't know, it's got a way of coming back, you know. And it does, you're right, it sounds like an 80s ballad. It does not sound like a 70s ballad.
75? So. Like, wasn't that like right in the teeth of disco?
I think disco's a little later, actually. But because disco actually bleeds into the 80s too. Like,
yeah.
That's another, like, have you ever watched Freaks and Geeks? Did you ever watch that show?
No, I have not.
Highly recommend. Very good, funny, sweet, really clever, set in 1981.
Uh-huh.
And that sort of ends with sort of like the end of disco. So, yeah, like late 70s, early 80s. But yeah, the Nazareth thing is wild because I'm thinking like mid 70s. Like, that's not really the kind of ballad you get in the mid 70s. No. You're getting mostly like folky stuff at that point. Or like, you know, whatever Zeppelin was doing. Do you consider Stairway to Heaven a ballad? Because I do not, but I think some people do because parts of it sound like a ballad. I don't know. I do not. But it certainly does not sound like that.
I think Stairway to Heaven is, it has its own category called Stairway to Heaven.
It's a weird song. It's, speaking of overrated, that's a very overrated song.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a bad song. It's just very overrated. It's kind of like Sweet Home Alabama or Freebird. And I say this as somebody who loves Skynyrd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a lot of stuff that's, like, really, really overrated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 70s ballad. Tuesday's Gone. There you go. That's what a 70s ballad sounds like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last but not least, the Blue Jays. Blowing. Really should have won it in Game 6. Had the chance to win it in Game 6. Lost it late in Game 7. That's rough. That's heavy. So I actually, you know, as much as I enjoy 80s power ballads, I was curious what the most, let's see, what most people would say is the, I'm trying to figure out the way to put this. What most people would say would be the most devastating, heart-wrenching lyrics. Because
from the 80s.
I did go with the one that was considered by far the most devastating, and you may have a different opinion. I would love to hear that if you do. But the one thing that the three of us on this podcast know all too well is that pain. You know it, I know it, Irby knows it. And how, like, I felt bad for Blue Jays fans. I felt so bad.
Yeah. Because
like, we've been there, and it's like, you just want to go out and give them a hug, be like, I know this, I know the road back, just follow, I'll be your guide, we'll get you back to loving baseball again. I mean, it's that bad. It's when you lose at that level, at that stage of the game, and a Game 7 winner, that's rough. But I went with Bring It On the Heartbreak by Def Leppard.
Interesting. Okay, see, that song does not make me sad. I thought he was kind of mad when he was singing that.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Because I'm sort of toggling between two. Well, first of all, the first thing I will tell you is that I was absolutely enraged about the fact that November Rain was written in 1991 because I really wanted to use that. Oh,
yeah.
Like, remember the 9-minute video, the most expensive video of all time with the funeral? And it was like super creepy, especially considering he was married to Stephanie Seymour at the time, which just made the whole thing creepier. You're like, wow, she is dead. That is weird and creepy. Like, that video, I was like a little bit afraid of it. I loved it, but I was afraid of it. Really, really bummed I couldn't use that, but alas, 1991. We lost a lot of stuff to 1991. We also lose the Bodyguard soundtrack to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of good stuff that almost makes the cut, like kind of like we were talking about how the sound is the same, but it technically doesn't.
A lot of Roxette, which would have been good here.
Yeah, the Roxette, a lot of it comes later. I did look into that a little bit, with a lot of the stuff from Pretty Woman. Roxette, most specifically, can't use it because it comes later.
Yeah.
So I considered Foolish Beat by Debbie Gibson, mostly because I was thinking of her crying her eyeliner all over her face mm-hmm. in the video and saying, I could never love again the way that I loved you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I would also like to propose I'll Be Over You by Toto, because I think these are the most like sort of depressing, devastating lyrics. Now, the 80s music is not known for its great lyricism, right? It is not the best decade mm-hmm. for that. Mm-hmm. But they are direct, and they do express these things. So when he says, in Toto, when he says, as soon as forever is through, I'll be over you, and all that, as soon as my heart mm-hmm. stops, I won't sing for you because it's going to be terrible for you, but you guys know the words. You know Toto, right?
Of course, yeah.
We're not going to use Africa. We are going to use I'll Be Over You, because man, was that guy depressed.
Yeah.
And he was like very much in his feelings in the sense that he was like, I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to be right again, and that is exactly how you feel when that happens to your team. Like, I will never be okay again. And I can assure you, I'm sorry, Blue Jays fans. I'm sorry to say this to you, but you won't be. No. Because it happened to me in 1997, and I'm still not okay. So it changed my entire personality.
Yeah.
And my fundamental beliefs about life. I just, like, it's you and I have said it a million times, like, I was crushed, and then I just became dead inside, and I can never be harmed again, which is, like, you know, there are good things about that,
can't
but there are
some
bad things about that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm numb now in a way that I never was before this happened, which is, you know, great for self-protection and maybe not so great for, like, being able to feel things and experience things. I'm dead inside now. So I hope that, you know, amongst the stages of grief, you guys can reach dead inside pretty soon, because it is better than the initial stage where you're like, I don't think I can get out of bed and go to school / work today, or maybe ever. I think I'm going to stop eating.
you know what's interesting is, like, because I went with the angry lyrics, you went with the depressed lyrics, and
mm-hmm.
that was my reaction in 2011. I was irrationally mad. I was like, fuck Bud Selig. Because if the All-Star winner didn't dictate the home field advantage, the Rangers would have had home field that year because they had the better record. So I was irrationally mad at Bud Selig. I was irrationally mad at David Freese. Like, I was just mad for a while.
This is really interesting, because it's like, I think we're kind of both right about this in terms of the songs we pick, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
And you know what's happened here is, there's a very old episode of Lollygagging, if you guys dig back through the archives. I wish I knew the episode number so I could tell you. When we talked about, like, what is your sort of irrational reaction when something bad happens in sports?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I behave like one of those, like, women who's, like, trapped in a gothic novel where you're, like, in a white nightgown and you're, like, pacing on the moors and, like, crying. That's me, right? I turn into a gothic heroine. And Bo said, I'm enraged. I become furious, irrationally so. And we have both just reflected that with what we've said here. So, hey, at least we're consistent, right? But, yeah, no, these are both, like, yeah, Blue Jays, whatever you're feeling, whatever stage of grief you're in, anger, denial, acceptance,
yeah,
roaming the moors in your nightgown, all of these things are okay. You just do what you need to do to take care of you. Listen to a little Toto. Listen to a little Def Leppard. Listen to a little Debbie Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to update it, you can listen to Taylor Swift's 10-minute long All Too Well. That one fits also if you're more of like a modernist.
Did you think about putting Total Eclipse of the Heart on any of these?
Actually, funny you mention that. Irby brought this up. Tied it to absolutely nothing that was in the rundown.
Okay.
And was like, can we use
it? Is that his honorable mention?
That's his honorable mention. He would like it assigned to the A's fan base. Once upon a time, I was falling in love, and now I'm only falling apart. And I thought,
you know,
it fits.
You know? Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to throw Lawrence I Saw Red in there, because, like, I mean, literally, we all saw red when John Fisher stole the A's,
mm-hmm.
right? So But yeah, that was his honorable mention, which I think is a fit. You could also go with She's Like the Wind, because they've kind of rolled over, you know, they've kind of blown over to Sacramento, and they're going to blow over to Las Vegas, allegedly, possibly, maybe not. Nobody knows. I couldn't think of any songs about cats, so I did try, but I could not think of a single 80s power ballad that mentioned cats, other than just going, like, with the musical Cats. And, look, I like Andrew Lloyd Webber. I mostly hate musicals, but I do kind of like Andrew Lloyd Webber. But the one exception that I will make is Cats. It is horrible. It is cringe. I cannot watch those people in that cat makeup. It's awful. So I couldn't get on board with that, even though that does come from the 80s. You know what I should have brought into this? Some Phantom of the Opera. Those are technically 80s power ballads.
Yeah. You could have.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, I am sorry. I should have incorporated some Phantom of the Opera into this. Really regretting that now. Really regretting that.
Well, technically speaking, you just did.
Well, it would need a specific song, so. I mean, I suppose the correct answer is probably Music of the Night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you probably have to put that with Toronto, right? Where, like, they slowly, they suck you in, and you get invested, and then they trap you under an opera house forever.
See, was that the hard part for you with the Blue Jays?
Because
pretty much every single 80s power ballad fits that result.
Right. That's the problem. Yeah, because either you're bad because you've had your heart broken, or you're crushed because you've had your heart broken. That is almost every single song meets that criteria.
Right.
Like, the only ones that don't really fit are the ones that are like, can't stay away from you, because that doesn't really make sense in this context, or like, you can't use Running Up That Hill for this, obviously. But like, most of them, like almost all of them, like High Enough by the Damn Yankees, like bring that in, you know, like did anybody, you know what we should have used for one of these? Endless Summer Nights by Richard Marx. Where he is thinking back fondly of when times were good. Before times were bad. Or you could use, you know what's really creepy? And we can't use this because this is from the 90s. But you remember that song Hazard by Richard Marx?
Yes.
I Swear I Left Her by the River. I Swear I Left Her Safe and Sound. It was like really creepy. You're like, wow, he murdered that girl and like left her by the river. And the police figured out. And he's like, I didn't do it, but he did it. Don't you think he did it? Do you think the guy did it? He's singing the song. Because I think he did it.
I think he did it, yeah.
It's weird to me. Yeah, like, I listened to that. I'm like, he totally did it. He absolutely did it. Just like in Jenny Was a Friend of Mine, the first song on Hot Fuzz by The Killers, that guy did it too. He totally. Murderers.
So, fascinating. All right, so I almost went with Cinderella, Don't Know What You've Got Till It's Gone. It's just one of my favorites.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites. I actually jammed to that to go dark. For my character in Butcher Boys. That was one of my pre-scene songs, yeah.
Bo, is that the one where they showed Bon Jovi in the video?
I don't remember the video.
There was a very funny Bon Jovi cameo. It's either that or Nobody's Fool. I can't remember which one. It's very funny. Where the girls all run right past him so that they can run over to John Bon Jovi. It's very funny. Very clever. But I can't remember which song it was, but it was Cinderella. Nobody's Fool doesn't really fit here the way Don't Know What You've Got Till It's Gone does. But that's going to bug me now. I need to find that video.
Yeah, so do I, actually. I don't know.
It's very funny.
I will find that video, though. Plus, I like to listen to that stuff. But I couldn't quite make that fit, right? Because
it almost works, though.
It's very close to really a lot of these. I think the closest was the Mets. The closest I could get to was the Mets. You know what? Because you know the last they didn't even make the playoffs, and it was on the last day. I almost made that work, but you know, I mean, beyond that. Yeah, I really just can make it, but it's just one of my favorite power ballads, and I wanted it in this list, but I couldn't quite make it work.
Well, for me, the real tragedy was there was no way to use Milli Vanilli in this, which really bummed me out. So, you know, we all love Milli Vanilli. This podcast is very pro Milli Vanilli.
I don't know. Very fraudulent Milli Vanilli. You could have done that with the Mets. I think that might have worked.
But those aren't ballads, was the problem. Like all the Milli Vanilli songs that people know aren't ballads.
Oh,
that
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Listen.
I don't know.
Nobody loves Milli Vanilli more than me. Remember that day when I made you guys talk in Milli Vanilli lyrics? I'm sorry about that. That was terrible.
You should not be sorry about that. That was fun. Blame It on the Rain.
So good. It's so good.
Blame It on the Rain. The lyrics suggest ballad. I know the music doesn't.
Yeah, it can't be a ballad unless the music suggests ballad. Yeah. So it's like, because Girl, You Know It's True doesn't suggest it lyrically, but... I don't know, the part where he's talking at the beginning, it's so funny. He sounds like he's reading from a script. It's so painful. It's just, it makes the whole thing even funnier. Good girl. One of the best uses of autotune of all time. All right, you got it? Any more spells you want to cram in here?
No, I don't. But I did have a thought.
Okay.
Because now we're going to talk about college football.
Oh, no.
What power ballad would you assign to this college football season?
Oh, wow. Is there a power ballad about total incompetence? I'm trying to think. Does it have to be an 80s one? Can I move outside of the 80s?
I think for this we're going to have to, because I don't think there's a power ballad in the 80s that fits this current college football season.
Like, can I go with Sabrina Carpenter's Dumb and Poetic?
Yes. Yes, I
don't even think I need to explain that.
You really don't.
You're so dumb and poetic. It's just what I go for. I like the aesthetic. You know, leave out the part where she's talking about jerking off to Leonard Cohen. it is really funny. But yeah, I mean, dumb and poetic. Is it poetic, though? I don't know. Maybe. It felt poetic to me when James Franklin got fired. It was beautiful. Uh-huh. It was beautiful and terrible. Again, we're back to Phantom of the Opera, right? Like, beautiful and horrifying. I might have to come back to Phantom of the Opera.
You might have to. We have three under.
What about you? So what are you assigning to this? Do you have a song for this college football season?
Gangster's Paradise.
What is it? Like, power over money, money over power.
Exactly.
Minute after hour. The problem with that song is I haven't heard it in so long, and I got really into. I always mix it up with the lyrics to the Weird Al parody of it.
Yes.
And I always get hung up on the churn butter once or twice when in the Amish paradise. And I will find myself singing like an amalgamation of the two without meaning to. He had another ballad that came right after that called See You When You Get There.
See, that's the thing.
Remember that one?
He's such a one-hit wonder that nobody knows that.
I know that. I had a single tape of it, and my dad and I used to listen to it in the kitchen while we were waiting for our microwave dinners to heat up because my mom wasn't home, and we weren't allowed to listen to that tape when my mom was home because she hated it. So my dad and I would listen to the single tape while making dinner, and he thought it was so funny, that part where Coolio's like, I guess I'll see you when you see me.
What?
It's so bad. It's such a bad song, but it's so bad it's good.
God.
We don't talk about bad music enough on this podcast. We need to do more of that.
I just
want to talk about bad songs.
We do. We can get into the entire Bewitched album. Yes, there was one.
I can't believe that was the whole album, and yet that song lives on in my head forever.
Some people say I look like me dad. What? Oh, okay.
It's that and the Irish jig playing in the background that really did me in on that one. Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, you can picture somebody just like doing a little jig like they're a leprechaun. Say you won't, say you won't, say you do, and I don't. It's so bad.
It's so bad.
Okay, it's more bad music to come. We promise, or we threaten, depending on your viewpoint on this.
I mean, honestly, this may be how we have to, what we have to do to get through the rest of this college football season. I mean, this is a joke. It's garbage. We've got three teams that are undefeated: Ohio State, Indiana, and A&M. Indiana and A&M both recently got pretty damn close to losing to an unranked team. Ohio State, who they played since Texas?
Ain't no one.
Exactly.
Also, I don't care because, like, Ohio State is very good, right?
They are.
I'm saying that because they, I do not. They are. Enjoy Ohio
State. I'm not dissing Ohio State. Of all the things, at least they got this right. Yes, Ohio State should be number one. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be.
It's like the only choice.
Yeah. Right. But, like, you've got, okay, so you've got four teams with five teams with one loss. A lot of two-loss teams, a lot of three-loss teams. Like, I think the thing that what really makes this garbage for me, Samantha, and yes, we are saying this college football season is garbage. What's making this garbage for me is the way that teams from awful conferences are being propped up. And I think the Big 12 is the perfect example of this. Texas Tech is number 5, 10-1 in a shit conference. BYU is number 11, 9-1 in a shit conference. Utah is 8-2 in a shit conference. They're beating up on everybody else until they play each other. And then one gets a loss. And then down the road, another one gets a loss when they play. There's like three good teams in the Big 12. And they're all ranked. How do you rank them above any SEC team, any Big Ten team? Like, why don't you have the Big 12 and the ACC, like, rank numbers, you know, 18, 19, 20, and below?
Okay, yeah, this is where I think the whole thing kind of falls apart, and it links to what we were complaining about last year, too, where we were saying, like, why would you get a bye? Why are you a higher seed if you win these conferences? It's not comparable. You're not competitive. There are teams that didn't even make the playoffs from the Big Ten and the SEC that are better than these teams. So that was the beginning of the problem. But yeah, like, what's happened this year then is because there are too many teams that are not elite in either the Big Ten or the SEC, then they get too many losses, right? Because they have to play each other, which is, of course, something that those teams in, for example, the Big 12 don't have to do, right? They don't have to play these SEC teams. They don't have to play these Big Ten teams. I could pick you out a number of SEC and Big Ten teams who are currently unranked, who I think could probably be the number one team in the Big 12 right now. The list is not short. I think I could come up with four or five of them that I think could probably beat Tech. Yeah. That's a problem. So, I mean, it's like, you can't go purely off record. And we've learned this with a lot of things, too. Look at Indiana, you know? Like, I mean, they're barely beating Penn State. And while I do actually think Penn State might beat Texas Tech, they're not very good right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, alma mater. I feel bad about it. It's all James Franklin's fault. Also, the fact that you have no quarterback. But, like, I mean, they only lost to Indiana on, like, a miracle play.
Yeah.
And they're not good right now. Now, I think there's probably an argument that says they probably should still be ranked, even though they have a high number of losses, because they are simply better at football than some of the people who are currently in the ranking. But they're not good. And Indiana barely beat them, right? So Indiana has one quality win. And they are number 2. That's crazy that you only need one quality win to be number 2 in the whole country. And you've had some pretty, you just had a pretty ugly scrape a week ago with somebody who's not even ranked. And A&M also had a scrape with somebody who's not ranked, who I think you have a less valid argument for even than Penn State in terms of this team is better than they appear to be. Still happened. I'm having a hard time swallowing that. But at the same time, I'm sure both of those teams are better than, like, let's say, Texas Tech,
right,
for example.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, what do you do? It's almost like I feel like we need to scrap the season, right? Like, reboot the software and start over. It did not work. Like, we can't have, like, Ohio State and then, like, essentially 8 blank spots and then, like, whoever's 9th or 10? Because that's kind of what it looks like right now to me, is that there is nobody worthy of occupying those spaces.
You know, it seems like the committee, just looking at the, I got the rankings in front of me here, it seems like they're just waiting for the last week and then the conference championships to sort this out for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
And I'm not necessarily against that per se. But
yeah,
at the same time, like, you're ranking Texas Tech at 5.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right? Like
yeah.
The AP has a better poll than you do. That is very disappointing.
Oh, God.
That is very disappointing that the AP has a better poll than the college football playoff rankings right now.
God, I mean, the bar is on the floor, right? But still, like,
yeah. We've been beating the hell out of the AP poll all year long, and it's still not right, but it's better than the college football playoff rankings, which is sad.
Well, and I think a lot of the problem here, too, is that, like, these mistakes become more glaring when you have a season like this that isn't fun. Because the season isn't fun, right? Because it's not fun when everyone's bad. It's not entertaining. So then we start to look for correctness, right? Because we're not having any fun, so we want them to get it right. And we're not going to get that either.
No.
So it's like, okay, like, last year, they mostly got it right, but it was a fun season, so we kind of didn't care that there were some problems, because it was competitive, it was fun, we didn't know who was going to come out on top, the playoffs were good, so whatever sort of minor errors were made by the committee, by the poll people, we were all just kind of like, nah, oh well, I'm having a good time, I don't care, you know, and it's all going to come out in the wash in the end. It's not going to work that way this year. So the correctness looks like an even more glaring error here, because it is the only thing we have to pay attention to, because nobody's having a good time. I mean, I guess if you're an Ohio State fan, you're probably having an okay time. And if you're an Indiana fan, you're having, like, a delusional good time, which is going to get probably quite quickly. Yeah. The A&M people, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say anything mean. I feel like saying something mean, so I just won't. I'll leave that up to you, because they're yours. So I will let you handle
they're
that.
They're not mine. No, they are not. No, they are not mine. No.
Well, they're yours in the way that the Ohio State people are mine. You know? Oh, like, this is the area you're crossed to bear.
They're fair.
Know?
That's
so
fair.
I was going to let you make the call on whether or not you wanted to say something antagonistic about A&M.
I mean, they've had one ugly game this year. That was last week.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think 3 is fine. I think if they sure. I think if they had pushed them up to 2, that would have been a little bit of a stretch. Personally, I think Georgia should be number 2 right now.
I agree.
Based off of what Georgia's done, I think they should be number 2 right now.
I agree with you. I absolutely think Georgia should be number 2. I also think that A&M is better than Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, to me right now, Indiana is a more egregious error. It's like they're afraid because it's a Big Ten team, and technically they don't have any losses, but it's like, there's no quality wins here, and there's been some ugliness.
Yeah.
And I think A&M is a better team. And again, yeah, sure, okay, it all gets sorted out in the postseason, but you got somebody going in at 2? Right now at 2. That's too high for a team we're not sure about.
You know what?
That is way too much advantage.
You know
somebody who hasn't earned it.
Isn't this lazy? They've got the 3 undefeated teams, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, because they don't know what to do. So they just went, well,
is Indiana, because I think you're absolutely right. Is Indiana better than A&M? No.
No.
Is A&M, well,
and
is A&M better than, A&M better than Georgia?
No.
I don't think so. Right?
No, I don't think
and that,
so.
And that's where we get the whole, well, you know, you can't put a team with 1 loss ahead of or behind a team with 2 losses. Like, oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Yeah, you can.
Right? Texas is sitting here 7-3. 2 of those losses were at the time to top 5 teams. They are still top 5 teams that they lost 2 of those games to. They're behind Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, who they handedly beat.
Yeah, see, that's okay. That's where it stops making sense to me.
Right.
Like, it's like you can't put somebody behind somebody they beat unless the only way that works is if one team has like 4 losses and the other team has 1, right? And it looks like somebody just had a bad week. Sure. That's not what we're looking at here. You can't do that.
Now,
you cannot tell me that you're ranking Texas behind 2 teams who they beat. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, two teams that are 8-2 while Texas is 7-3. Now, I'm not suggesting
That's my other problem. Those aren't undefeated teams. They're two lost teams.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So what's two losses, three losses, who cares?
I just want to be clear. I'm not suggesting Texas should be in the playoff right now because I'm not. That Florida loss was that bad. This might be too little too late getting things together, and that Georgia loss looks worse than it was, but they just couldn't get anything going. So no, I don't think they should right now. If they beat A&M, then yeah, we got to start talking about a playoff again for Texas. But right now, no, I'm not suggesting they should be in that playoff, but Oklahoma and Vanderbilt ahead of them is what bugs me.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. And I'm not sure I agree. I think given the sadness of the field this year, I actually think Texas probably is a playoff team and does deserve to be there, particularly over some of these like conference winners from these like trash conferences, for sure. But yeah, I think this conversation is going to have to change a lot if they beat. Well, when is it? Is it this week that they play A&M?
They play A&M on Black Friday. They play A&M after Thanksgiving.
Oh, so 2 weeks. Okay, so 2 weeks from now. So that's the last game of the season, right? Regular season game?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to be really interesting to see what happens there. Because I think we're going to get some answers there. Number one, we're going to find out who Texas really is and who A&M really is. And number two, we're going to find out if the committee wises up as far as, well, look what's happened here. Are the rankings going to adjust accordingly? And then we're going to find out if they are just like another BCS, which I suspect they probably are.
So. They might be. They might be, but either way, like this is Miami's 13. Two bad losses on their ledger, and they're 13.
Yeah.
Right.
And see, that I can't even disagree with, because that's how bad everybody is. The field is so bad.
It's garbage.
Two hideous losses.
Well, okay.
Actually, kind of makes sense at 13.
Is it like, okay? We think it's garbage. But I wonder, just devil's advocate, is this NIL parody? And it just presents itself as bad football.
Okay, interesting. So you're basically saying that because enough schools had enough money to draw people away from the big fish, and maybe some people were able to get some money somewhere where they wouldn't have got it at a better program, because that program had too much competition for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I think if you're saying that most NIL comes from local companies, which I don't know that we have data on that, and certainly if we do, I don't know what it is, but there's a pretty strong suggestion that a lot of NIL money is coming from local companies, right? So you would be looking at athletes from that specific area who had ties to that school, as opposed to just I'm picking a guy from any school, right? Because you're not getting like Gatorade money if you're that person, no matter what.
Right.
So you're hoping to get like local endorsements, essentially. It's kind of like being in a local commercial. So, or at least something that's vaguely regional. Mm-hmm. So yeah, perhaps what that has done is drawn people away from bigger programs. And I don't think we know the answer to this, but I think it's a valid theory. For sure.
I mean, really what sent me down that path, and I'm going back to the College World Series in softball, Nyjah Kennedy took $1 million to go to Texas Tech, which is not a softball school. Never has been a softball school. Now it will be a softball school because they made it all the way to the final because Nyjah Kennedy is the best pitcher in college softball. And they made it to the College World Series. And now they're getting recruits that they weren't getting before. So
okay. Interesting. Do you know where her money came from?
It was $1 million deal for last year, and then during the final it was announced that she had signed another $1 million NIL deal.
Whoa.
To stay at Tech.
For her.
Yeah. Great for her. Well, Tech came out on the wrong end of that one, but if they had any other pitching to go with her, they would have won that championship because she is the best pitcher in college softball. So yeah, I get the NIL deal and I get the money involved, but that's what started me thinking about other sports like football. And all of a sudden, we've got this parody. Is the NIL giving us, instead of a handful of really, really great teams, we're getting mostly average to below average teams because the talent is spread nationwide as opposed to the usual suspects?
Yeah, I think there's something there, I think, at least possibly, because, okay, so if, like, take her, for example. So you've weakened a stronger team where she likely would have ended up, right?
Yeah.
Because she's got more money. But it also makes her team better, right? Mm-hmm. And also the other people who are going to go there, because there is this really good player there, will make that team better. So what you get is a lot of mediocrity. Right? It's not like, oh, suddenly this team will be really bad and this one will be really good. It just means everything gets watered down. So there are more people in the mix, which is fun in theory, but it also means that all those people in the mix are not very good because mm-hmm. there's a lot more programs than there are top tier talent. That's right. Always been true. It's just like we say, like in professional sports, there just aren't enough quarterbacks to go around in the NFL. There are not 32 people who can play quarterback at mm-hmm. an NFL level. There are not enough pitchers to fill out 30 major league rotations. You know, they just don't exist. The athlete is much rarer than the job. It's one of the few jobs that's out there that everybody wants that they still can't find enough people to do.
Yeah.
So
economics 101.
I wonder if it's
supply and demand.
Yeah. It's like, so basically, if the supply is getting watered down because it's getting spread out even further and there wasn't enough of it to begin with, you're going to get a lot of wishy-washy, mediocre teams. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. What was that? Now I'm blanking. God. It's a Dire Straits song.
Oh, they're one of my all-time favorite bands. Elaborate and I'll tell
Money
you
for Nothing. This. Money for Nothing.
Yes.
That's
my least favorite Dire Straits song, but yes.
That is the anthem for the college football season, I think. Money for Nothing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Love my Dire Straits, not a huge fan of Money for Nothing. But yeah. it is apropos to this situation, for sure.
All right.
Could have got into some Dire Straits there for those 80s ballads. I mean, some of that stuff is from the 70s, but some of it's from the 80s.
Yeah.
Could have got into a little Dire Straits. I'm going to think about going forward. I'm not going to use Brothers in Arms, but.
See, that's my favorite one is Brothers in Arms. That's my
favorite is Tunnel of Love.
Ooh.
Okay. Greatest song ever written, in my opinion. Greatest single song ever written.
Wow. Tunnel of Love. Okay. Good song. Mm-hmm. Great song. Brothers in Arms is my personal favorite.
Another good song.
Yeah.
Great good song. Album, too.
Great song. Yeah, we're going to have to do some more with music because this was fun.
Yeah, we should. We'll do good music and bad music. I know earlier I threatened to do bad music, but we will do good music, too. We will do both. And we will integrate it with sports. So if you're not a music person, you will still have a reason to be hanging about these parts. And Irby's going to be horrified when he finds out that we promised this to you. But I think he's going to come through okay.
He'll be okay.
I think he'll be all right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of good music, wherever you're listening to Lollygagging Sports, give us a like, subscribe to the show, help us out with that algorithm so we get some more lollygaggers in here. But for this week, we're done. We're out of here. Until next week, if you have power ballads that you would like to attach to some of the heartbreak, send them over to us. Our socials are on the show page. But until then, until next week, watch some football. It's good for you.
Afraid of no ghost.